It's in earshot. Well, no, I explained it to her at the time. She brought me home a copy of it that she'd found, you know, at the library's book giveaway. Oh, honey, I thought you'd like to have this. And because I adore my wife, I said, gee, thanks, honey. And sat there and reread the book. The whole blessed thing. And once I got good and into it, I explained to her, I said, sweetheart, I hate this book. I hated it the first time I read it. And, you know, she kind of scrunchied up her face like I... No, stop that. Don't do that. I said, I'm going to explain why. And I'm not so much going to explain as I am going to let you share why. And so, over the next several nights, as we were in bed getting ready to go to sleep, we, you know, doing our best Mike and Carol Brady impression with my little half Nez quizzers on. No. I would read her selected passages from Atlas Shrugged. And you know what? Our anniversary is coming up. It'll be here on the 1st of May. And there are just, it's not the memories, I mean, yes, you have the memories of the big things, like the birth of our children, that you think back on as a reason that the relationship is special. But if you give it a moment, you think about those precious little moments that just sort of fly by when you're both just so damn happy to be together. And one of those moments... In reading that a segment of that god-awful book to my beloved wife, it was one of the love scenes. And I can remember vividly to this moment reading along in my best serious stentorian Bob Reads a Book Out Loud voice and having Agnes nearly doubled in laughter, shrieking madly to the point that, you know, Luke and Cades went through, Mommy, it came through, Mommy, is Mommy okay? Mommy's fine. And it's sort of leaping at my shoulders, stop it, Bob, stop. So that she understood just how terrible that book was. But it's a very popular thing to say that in right-wing circles to say that you're a big fan of Ayn Rand, because they, you know, who wants to say Milton Friedman turns me on, really? The reason I got involved in public service, by and large, if I had to credit one thinker, one person, it would be Ayn Rand. So it comes as a little bit of a surprise today when it turns out that Paul Eddie Munster Ryan has given an interview to the National Review's Bob Costa. No, not Bob Costas. No, Bob Costa. In which he was asked about Ayn Rand, and little Eddie Munster said, I reject her philosophy. It's an atheist philosophy. It reduces human interactions down to mere contracts, and it is antithetical to my worldview. If somebody is going to try to paste a person's view on epistemology to me, then give me Thomas Aquinas, who believed that man needs divine help in the pursuit of knowledge. Let's see, I get my hypocritical theologians. Was it Thomas Aquinas? No, that was St. Augustine of Hippo who said, make me a pure and godly man, God, but just not yet. I'm not done with the hookers. Yeah. Thomas Aquinas. Thomas Aquinas. He's the one that came up with, what was he, 13th century? You know, one of those real forward thinkers who used the teachings of the Prince of Peace to say that there was something called just warfare. That sometimes Jesus wants you to go and kill other people. Because, you know, Jesus was like that. You know, there is some stuff out there that we could just throw on the trash heap of history and get along very well without. So he has now thrown over poor Ayn Rand for Thomas Aquinas. He went on and said, don't give me Ayn Rand, he says. Well, we don't have to give him Ayn Rand because he's got her on his bookshelf already and he's read everything that she ever wrote. And by his own admission, he gives the books away as gifts. Yeah, welcome to your internship in my office, Sonny. Now, here's 758 pages of really bad writing. Bring me back 200 words on why she defines the greatest principles of America, okay? Can you do that? Good, thanks. Yeah. Marty, I think so. We all know that Paul Ryan is lying, right? Well, is he a gallbladder? I mean, Republican? Yes, then we know you're right. With regard to that other gallbladder, thorn in the side Thursday, after all, when the gallbladder's roughly over on your right flank sort of kind of area. Transferring certain attributes? Asks David in Tennessee. Ms. Monica Crowley, considered attractive by some and unmarried. Really? A confirmed bachelorette, as the Brits might say? A confirmed bachelorette. Moreover, transferring a bit of self-loathing, it's just a question to be answered, to paraphrase Ms. Crowley. It's just a question to be answered. Don't you just love them? I mean, Darlene, oh, thank you, Darlene. I'm glad you like it. New name for Repiglicans. I like that, says Darlene. So henceforth, we can refer to Repigs as rotten gallbladders. Yeah, you don't even have to. I think we can, as my old theater teacher once would say, we can take the rotten as red. Just gallbladders. Essentially useless and cause nothing but pain. Because think about it. You never get up in the morning and say, you know what? Damn, my gallbladder feels great. The only way you know you have a gallbladder is when it starts making you miserable. And that's not like other parts of the body. I mean, you can wake up and just feel energized and springy in your feet and your legs, and you want to go and do something. Or maybe you feel particularly clear-headed and everything just comes together in your brain and something makes perfect sense. You walk out on a spring morning and it's cool but not too cold. You only need a light jacket. And your lungs feel good. And you have a bite of toast with a little bit of really fresh butter and a little bit of jam on it, and you swallow it and you go down and it goes down and your stomach responds, but oh, pleasant, happy. Of course, there's that old saying that there is nothing so overrated as bad sex and so underrated as a good boop. There are ways that we know that our body is happy, but the gallbladder does nothing but tell us when it's not. And Repiglicans are never happy, unless they're, you know, bombing or killing someone. And then they have to tell us that we all have to be happy about it, too. In the world of the human body, generally, most of it tries to get along. The lungs don't want to be the feet. The feet, well, they don't want to be the liver. The liver's happy not being the kidneys. The kidneys are content where they are and don't necessarily want to be the brain. The brain doesn't want to be the heart. But the gallbladder will stop everything and say, hey, over here, look at me, look at me. I'm going to hurt you all. I'll take every last one of you down if you don't pay attention right now. And screams and screams and screams until you finally just go and you get the damn thing ripped out. And
Wait. I had something to say.
The gallbladder is the Republican of the human body. Just saying. But it is. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. We got a lot to work with. And in fact, we missed Monday, I missed Tuesday. And so everything's mixed up. Because this has more and Monday written all over it. But we'll just have to save it. It'll go stale. We'll just do it now, if that's okay. Now that everybody understands that Willard is going to be the Republican nominee, despite the best efforts of probably a majority of Republican voters, the horse race is shaping up. He said, she said. And so it's out there, and I'd like to know how he got my email address. Have one of you merry pranksters signed me up for the... did somebody make a donation to Willard Romney's campaign in my name? And use my email address. That's not nice. But I got my very first Willard Romney email today. It comes from info@mittromney.com. I guess it was sent out by the mail handler targetedvictoryemail.com. Junk mail. Bob, can anybody do a Willard me yet? Isn't that kind of like doing an impression of... what? Doing an impression of the voice of one of those translators at the UN? I mean, in a script? Just kind of dull. Bob. Thank you, America. Well, name's Bob, not America, Willard. Otne Ute Eitbred. Thank you, America. We will win on November 6th. Today is the start of a new campaign to unite every American who knows in his or her heart that we can do better. And that's where he kind of lost me. I mean, I know America can do better. But thinking that Willard Romney is the guy who's going to lead us there? Sorry, that's a real non-starter for me. It's kind of insulting. A new campaign to unite every American who knows in his or her heart that we can do better. So he doesn't want to unite anybody else except the Americans who know in their hearts that we can do better. Well, I know we can do better. Barack Obama is not the progressive, populist, pro-working class president that most of us would like for him to have been. There's been much too time bowing and scraping to the corporate interests, I think in particular back to a little thing that I wanted to mention. I missed it. I had an argument with my gallbladder. But being the president, President Obama issued an Earth Day 2012 proclamation. Now, last year, he made no bones about talking about climate change. But here comes the 2012 proclamation. Not a word in it, not a word about climate change. This is a political year, and the art of politics is the art of fear. You know, I would like to have a president who is bold enough to get in people, you know, get up in people's faces and about reality things. You know, not about imaginary stuff, but about reality things. And climate change, climate catastrophe, looming freaking disaster is real. But we can't talk about the Imut Clay Ainge thing while the independent voters are paying attention. You know, the independent voters, they're not a very bright bunch. They think that there might be competing virtues between Willard Romney and Barack Obama. So all those AFL-CIO types who want to build the Keystone XL pipeline and poison half the country for a few transient jobs, well, we can't put climate change in there because they don't like hearing about climate change. Yeah, I know. Storm blowing through since... But no, even though Barack Obama doesn't say anything about climate change, and even though we would prefer to have had a more robust consumer financial protection bill, even though we would prefer to have had a more robust health care bill, even though we would have preferred to have been out of Afghanistan by now, if you don't like that, wait till you get a load of doggone car Romney. Just say it. David in Tennessee noting, imitating Willard, he's a tough one, Bob. Getting the right intonation for a bowl of tapioca pudding that stutters. No damn fair. Getting the right intonation. I'll be better in a minute. Getting the right intonation for a bowl of tapioca pudding that stutters will take some serious craft. Get Frank Caliendo on the blower. It might be more than Frank could pull off. It's like, I don't know, it's like doing an impression of bathwater. Impression of a cold hamburger. It's I don't know, it's like mimicking the dog that doesn't bark. The right intonation for a bowl of tapioca pudding that stutters. Ooh, I am slain. And sort this out. Please pardon me. Please pardon me. While we, I run some interesting bumper music. And, check on a couple of things. We'll be right back. This is The Horn. Okay, my apologies. There's a little musical interlude there for anyone who's listening via the podcast. But I just checked in with Ben Burch, and for at least as long as the stream holds here, I can let you know that apparently there are troubles on the server end. And it's frustrating, but thank you to everyone who let me know that there are issues. There it is. Let me just get this little response done. So I don't know if we're being hit again or what. And the nice thing is, though, it appears that we're rolling for now, and we'll do the best that we can. No, Ray, I'm not actually on more meds than Keith Richards. I'm actually on relatively few of the little buggers. And I'm actually proud to announce that I haven't had any Rush Limbaugh medicine all day long. It hasn't felt necessary, and so if it's not necessary, I don't use the stuff. But with all this buffering and everything going on, I may yell Calgon take me away sooner rather than later. But at any rate, if everybody hasn't already tuned away, let's pick up where we left off. Oh yeah, where were we? Well, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Would you mind terribly if we jumped into a little bit of funny just for a minute or so? Every now and then, you know, we need a good giggle. I saw, I was cruising around, and it doesn't translate to radio at all, but I tweeted it last night because it needs a good watch. I hate missing an anniversary, and apparently 2 days ago was the umpty thousandth anniversary of the sack of Troy. And over at Crooks and Liars, lo and behold, there it was. A segment from The Chasers' War on Everything from Australian television, I think it's from the ABC, in which they tried to find how many places they could leave a Trojan horse. And I hadn't had a great big rollicking belly laugh in I don't know how long. I won't ruin anything for you, but if you scroll down two or three pages into Crooks and Liars, you'll find it, and it's worth the time. No, that's not the kind of funny that I had in mind. I had more in mind this, in which Donald Trump and that thing on his head this got me just about as badly as David's email a couple of minutes ago, and I'm still giggling over that. You missed it because we were all buffered up. Now see, this will start it all over again. Regarding my remarks on, you know, who does a good Willard Romney, David quipped, imitating Willard, he's a tough one, Bob. Getting the right intonation for a bowl of tapioca pudding that stutters will take some serious craft. Get Frank Caliendo on the blower. First time I went through that one, oh, I came apart a little bit. Just, and I don't know, maybe you have to have been to a certain place in your own mind at some point in time in your own existence to really get the humor, or at least the visual, of a stuttering bowl of tapioca. Vanilla, of course. But no, this will get this will lay me low too, I suspect, and I hope it will you too, because we all need a laugh once in a while. Now, I don't know who invited him. Probably some member of the Scots Parliament who has deep ties to the oil industry, or is heavily invested in Trump World or whatever it is he's building over there. But no, Donald Trump and that thing on his head were actually invited to testify or speak to the Scottish Parliament. Let's leave it at that.
I don't think you should ruin your countryside. I don't think you should ruin the looks and the great beauty of Scotland, which is one of its great assets, if not its single greatest asset, with this. In fact, I noticed coming in, they go, come home to Aberdeen. They have a big campaign, and they have pictures of magnificent fields and magnificent cathedrals and all of this. And I said to all of the people that were following me at the airport, where are the windmills? I don't see any windmills. They have fields. They have cathedrals. They have everything. They must have 15 different pictures of beautiful sites, not one windmill. I said, where are the windmills? It's false advertising. And I can tell you this. I am an expert at tourism, as you know, and I give a list of the awards. I've won many, many awards. In fact,
I've been
in
Chicago.
The Travel and Leisure said the best hotel in North America. I've won many, many awards over the last short period of time, let alone long period of time. My clubs are rated among the best in the world.
All that self-congratulatory horseshit there, doesn't that remind you of the Commandant or whatever in the first Police Academy movie standing there at the podium? We've had many, many, many awards. Oh, but do continue, Donald, please.
I have 5-star, 5-diamond in some cases.
I mean, why aren't people, like, throwing haggis at this guy?
6-star clubs, and it's the only one in the category.
I've got a club that goes to 11.
I am an expert on tourism. If you dot your landscape with these horrible, horrible structures, you will do tremendous damage.
My question is,
There's going to be a question? I didn't realize there was going to be a question. I didn't realize there had been a question. The Donald just walks in and starts talking about these horrible, horrible, horrible structures. He's talking about windmills. Somewhere out there, Brother Albert's having a conniption. What? These horrible, horrible, horrible windmills. Not his horrible, horrible, horrible golf courses. No, the horrible, horrible, horrible windmills. But there's apparently a question.
You will do tremendous damage.
My question is, where is the clinical evidence? Not an opinion, an empirical assessment. Where is your clinical evidence? Who has produced it? Where will you share it with the committee?
Well, first of all, I am the evidence. I think I'm more of an expert. You know what? I think I'm a lot more of an expert than the people that you'd like me to hire who are doing it for the paycheck. But I am an expert in tourism. I am considered a world-class expert in tourism.
By whom? I am considered a world-class expert in tourism in my own mind.
So when you say, where is the expert and where is the evidence, I'm the evidence.
Oh, Jesus. You know, if they start building... What's next? If they start building the windmills, he's going to be laying down across a platform and drawn and quartered screaming... Freedom! Where's Mel Gibson when you need him? The way the Associated Press reports it is, Donald Trump on Wednesday swept into Scotland's Parliament to demand the country end plans for an offshore wind farm. Now, there are certainly offshore oil platforms that aren't horrible, horrible, horrible tourism killing. No. And much as was the case, of course, when he got eaten alive at that D.C. affair, he was laughed at. And he doesn't yet. You can argue with him, and he'll call you names, just like he did, well, with that open... I suspect there will be another YouTube episode of Mock the Dummy out of this one. Ray noting. Effer knows a lot about horrible structures. Horrible, horrible. And Sandra, is there no end to this son of a bitch? Wow. Just wow. So, no, there's no, well, no end of him, there's no end of him in sight. Now, you know, if you don't have a globe handy, you've probably got Google Earth. If you happen to notice where Scotland is, or if you're any kind of a golfing fan tuned in to, say, the British Open, which is held in Scotland, and notice that those guys are playing in mid-July in jackets and sweaters, and that their hair is starched straight out, no matter how well groomed and coiffed those golfers may be. If you understand, for instance, the way in which Scottish Lynx golf courses developed, they were not developed by a Trump or anything. Actually, it was a game that developed as a pastime for bored shepherds. They started knocking a rock around the field and trying to hit an arbitrary stick in the ground a couple of hundred yards away. Bunkers, sand traps, were not designed by Tiger Woods or Arnold Palmer or Jack Nicklaus or Robert Trent Jones. Golf evolved as a very, and I know it's very much deemed a 1% elitist kind of, and it has become that, but it evolved in a very organic fashion. The bunkers, the famous bunkers of the Scottish golf courses, formed because there was a bit of a height of land behind which sheep could cluster and out of the wind, and they would sit there, and because they're sheep and not overly bright, they would stand in one spot and eat all the grass until they were down to the bare sand. And that's the origin of the Scottish Lynx course bunker. Because there is a vast wind resource in Scotland. And so what you essentially have in Donald Trump is an argument by him that is predicated on the fact that he doesn't have enough sense to invest in it himself. And if the Donald can't make a dollar out of it, it is not worth anything to the Donald. It is an offshore wind project. But I'm sure he thinks it'll affect the... Because, again, he's Atne Ute Aitbre. He thinks it'll affect the wind patterns on his golf course. Oh, Jesus. The stupid. It hurts. But I think we all need a little giggle. And we didn't do a lot of, well, we didn't really do any prayer meeting last night. So by all means, let's not let Tony Perkins,
Norman?
Yes, Mother. Of the American Family Association. No, he's No, Tony's from the Family Research Council. That's what it is. Family this, family that. Screw the American family. The American family screws. Whatever. He showed up on American Family, American Family Association, AFA Today Radio. The thing that I heard driving one time down through southern West Virginia headed toward Tennessee, and heard another time crossing Indiana last summer. They can't talk about how much they like Willard Romney, so that, because Tony doesn't. Yeah, if you're ever, Ann, you know, I love you. If y'all are ever invited to stay over to Tony's place, don't take a shower. Because he doesn't like you. So instead, they got to have something else to talk about.
The influence of Marxists on the Obama administration. And a lot of people, when they hear that at first blush, they say, oh, that's a crazy right-wing conspiracy nut here. But then you, and I'm not calling you that. I've been called that before. But
only because you are.
But then you begin
those
to
are actually the nice things.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Sandy. Good to be with you.
Thank you.
Those are nice
We've
things.
We've all been there.
Yes, yes. But then you began to name one person after another that has had influence on President Obama when he was younger, and even today in his administration, who are out and out Marxists. They don't apologize for it. They're proud of it. You know, talk about that if you would.
Well, let me just say that coming on
Now we'll get to, oh, Jesus. It's another attack blonde, Sandy Rios. Her name was Sandy. She was a Rios. Oh, stop it, Bob. We've talked about me singing on the program. What is this? Did he just say what I think he said? There really are Marxists.
President Obama, when he was younger, and even today in his administration, who are out and out Marxists. They don't apologize for it. They're proud of it.
There are people in Barack Obama's administration who are out and out Marxists. They don't hide it. They're proud of it. Just anybody. I mean, I'm prone to missing a story here and there. Albert called in last night. Albert was on top of the story of Mississippi Governor Goober T. Wilberforce's statement that all us Democrats want to ever do is have abortions. You know, I got up this morning, had myself some high-fiber cereal, and then went and had me an abortion. Wait a minute. I'm a guy. I can't. Yeah, I went and bought somebody one. Yeah, Democrats. Liberals. Progressives. We stand on street corners giving out free passes to the abortion clinic. You know, that abortion octoplex that the right wing is quite concerned, quite convinced really does exist out in Kansas somewhere, just like the Onion done told them, because the Onion, it don't lie. No, I'm prone to miss a story here and there. And I really must have missed this one. What paper broke it? What TV network? Was it the New York Times? I mean, was it CNN or maybe you know, a real professional journalistic outfit like CBS? Did they break the story of all the people who are proudly Marxists inside the Obama administration? Because I would have gotten something about it. I try to get all the memos. I read a bunch every day. You know, walking around with their little Mao hats on and listening to Soviet choir music, singing the Internationale in their iPods. And
you'll talk about that if you would.
Well, let me just say that coming on the heels of Alan West taking such hits about saying these things, I have to say to you, I don't care what they think about me, and I don't care what people call me. I don't
care. Well, of course, we do here at AFA and AFR, Sandy, and we're very sensitive to our image. And we,
I bet, yeah.
You know, the Wildmans, you know, we run from controversy, so anyway.
Yes, I just know that. But the point is, when Al...
Apparently, the goober there also runs from, he don't run from the fashion department at Fred's, let's put it that way.
One refuses to back down. I'm with him all the way. We have been silenced on this issue. So I knew something about this. And so when I started researching Barack Obama, because I am from Chicago, and we were tracking him a long time before it became, you know, the news. I was back there, and we were researching his past. And that's when I started learning all of these things about his connections. So I could do a whole monologue on this. And
she could, and it would probably involve Barack Obama, 5 years old, eating a Marxist dog.
I will if you like.
Name some names that have been influential on President Obama's political ideology in his career that you find...
Now, wait a minute, Goober. You said that there are actual Marxists in his administration. Name some names who people have been influential on him. That's changing slanders in the middle of the stream.
Marxists are... You know, okay. Fall into that category.
So when he wrote his Dreams of Life...
He couldn't get to Leninist? Maoist is too hard to pronounce? What?
He mentions Frank, affectionately this person, Frank, who mentored him. Well, Frank was Frank Marshall Davis. Frank Marshall Davis was editor of a communist newspaper in Chicago before he went to Hawaii to work in the communist movement out there during World War II and after World War II. Now, the interesting thing about this is Frank Marshall Davis was an out-and-out communist. He also was a sexual pervert. Right? He wrote a book called Sex Rebel, which is a whole different issue. But he was Barack Obama's mentor.
Well, that certainly... He wrote a book called Sex Rebel? And that certainly proves he was a sexual pervert, doesn't it? Oh, Sandy. You're probably going to just sort of blow right past that one, aren't you? Because you don't want us going to all those the websites that list in stunning detail the sexual peccadilloes of the right wing. You don't know.
The first year that Barack Obama was in office in the White House, there was an ornament on the Christmas tree of Mao Zedong, which doesn't make it sound silly, but that's not silly to me. That's all.
Jesus. They're recycling old stuff. Do you remember when Ann Coulter, during the Clinton administration, which I was reminded by looking at a calendar the other day, was actually a rather long time ago? Do you remember when Ann Coulter alleged that Bill and Hillary Clinton decorated their Christmas tree with condoms? Because I do. Well, here we are. 15 years later, and understanding that the general, neither gallbladders nor Republicans nor conservatives have much in the way of a memory, they'll believe anybody that says, you know, I'm a Christian and I'm a conservative, and there are thetans living in your blood. They'll believe that because they're believers. They're not knowers. They're not thinkers. They are not intellects. They're believers. It's what they do. They believe things. And so they'll eat that right up. It's entirely possible that they had that Christmas ornament. And it's entirely possible they had that Christmas ornament as a sort of inside joke, little jab at the Sandy Rioses of the world.
Well, it's like desecration. He was a mass murdering communist.
Well, yeah, you have to ask yourself, why are those things there? Why? Now, let me just tell folks, because we've only got a few more minutes here with Sandy, if you want to read Sandy's column, which is more detail about what she just talked about, you need to go to
onenewsnow.com
and just in the search engine type Sandy Rios, R-I-O-S, and her column will pop up. It's headlined Space Shuttle Discovery and Our New Comrades. Space Shuttle Discovery and Our New Comrades. It's a column she wrote about this.
It's called.
Go to onenewsnow.com and search that. You can find it. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, well, I would encourage you to read the article because I think what, you know, we, in society today, we throw around labels a lot, and I think we've become desensitized. And what we're looking here and what Sandy's bringing up here are not labels. We're not calling somebody a Marxist or a socialist because...
And we're not guessing.
No,
These are names and places and people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We're looking at facts.
Right. And the only thing is, here we are, the 2 or 3 minutes after the allegation, and we still haven't heard who that unapologetic Marxist is in the Obama administration. I was really keen to hear that. Might have given me a little bit of hope. Because, you know, we know that his administration has people who, like Paul Ryan, like Ayn Rand. We know there are Milton Friedman types in the financial reaches of the Obama administration. We know that there are neoliberals and globalists and... Hey... But no, here we are, and we still don't have... But Tony wants to talk now. You know, that woman's been talking, and after all, he ascribes to that philosophy that says, for it is a shame for a woman to speak in church. And this is just like church, because the American Family Association is an outreach arm of a church that was started by a little rant preacher named Donald Wildman in Tupelo, Mississippi. He came to fame complaining about cartoons. No, really.
What the media has done, going back to earlier discussion about the media, is that they have attempted to marginalize anyone who challenges this administration on those principles and that driving ideology. You know, it goes back to what they did to those that, you know, questioned the issue of his birth certificate. Look, I don't know about all that, but I will tell you this, it's a legitimate issue from a standpoint of what the Constitution says, and
You got that? The birth certificate is a legitimate issue from what the Constitution says. Actually, it's not. Because that whole thing is settled law by the Supreme Court of the United States for a long damn time. Never mind the fact that Barack Obama really was born in Hawaii. Not Kenya. Or Mars. And never mind the fact that there aren't any card-carrying Marxists in his administration. Never mind. Yeah, it's a legitimate issue, says Tony Perkins. And Mitt, really, Willard. And don't take Seamus either. Don't go to Tony's house. Just don't. It won't be pretty.
I think what we've done is we've done great harm to the foundation of our government by marginalizing and attacking anyone who brings up a legitimate issue. And what Sandy's talking...
But you know what? If you're dealing with presidential politics and you say that you're receiving transmissions from Planet Kolob to ask about Barack Obama's birth certificate, the liberal media isn't marginalizing you. You are marginalizing you. That's the way I read it. Don't you? So that seems to be, after we've solved our technical issues, that seems to be a nice stopping place to take a little break and come back in a few minutes. The Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. And so are your calls. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you want to pay the freight, you got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan or whatever, you can dial straight in, 304-658-3333. It's ever so easy. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, April 26, 2012.
I've had worse. You liar!
Come on, you pansy! Just a flesh wound.
Britain smacked by extreme weather whiplash.
It will do a lot to stimulate the world economy.
Secretary Chu talks sexy, sexy energy efficiency. Agent Orange Corn? Dow Chemical says yes, please. Plus...
So I've called on Congress to prevent this from happening.
Oh, yeah.
Slow jamming the news. How about slow walking climate change?
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Can liberals and conservatives find common ground? Yes, if the conservatives can drill for oil on it.
Sounds about right. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, just a quick weather note. In Death Valley this week, the temperature reached a record 113 degrees, the hottest April temperature ever on record in these United States.
Yep, it's more wacky, wacky, wacky weather ahead.
Just a coincidence, of course. In March, we had more than 15,000 weather records broken. But let's look the other way, shall we?
Sure, we'll have more on that in a moment. But first...
It's what we call in the United States a no-brainer. It will save your citizens and your country energy.
The world must boost development of clean energy and energy efficiency to stimulate the global economy and mitigate climate change. That's the message from energy ministers from around the world at the Clean Energy Ministerial Conference in London this week. Our very own U.S. Secretary of Energy, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Stephen Chu, pushed other countries to follow through on their commitments.
If you think about energy efficiency, there's a tremendous opportunity to build an infrastructure that literally could be twice as efficient as the one that was built in the previous century.
And the only thing that's more exciting than talking about infrastructure is hearing Secretary Chu talk about infrastructure.
You know, but he is right. Energy waste accounts for about a third of global carbon emissions. So improving energy efficiency is really, truly the low-hanging fruit and would actually save consumers $1 trillion over the next 20 years. But for the U.S., in addition to providing funding and personnel for these new international programs to deploy clean energy around the world, Secretary Chu also called for a new international testing standard to make it possible to build energy efficiency into all new appliances and all new infrastructure being built all around the world, especially for developing countries. While the energy ministers meet in London, extreme spring whiplash is hitting the rest of the UK. 1 week after instituting nationwide water restrictions due to a record drought, British officials are now handing out sandbags to combat flash floods across the UK as a month's worth of rain fell in 24 hours amid a week-long torrential downpour. Flash floods are overwhelming riverbanks and flood controls because the dry ground is too hard now to absorb the intense rainfall.
And yet, with all of these records and with all of this insane extreme weather, as we talked about earlier this week, the coverage on the Sunday shows of climate change has gone from more than 60 minutes in 2009 down to 20 minutes in 2010, now about 15 minutes in 2011. The worse things get, the less the mainstream corporate media seems to talk about that.
We've reported before on the disturbing rise of superweeds now plaguing American farmers after an egregious overuse of Monsanto's Roundup herbicide across the U.S. and the world. It's caused weeds to develop resistance to Roundup many years earlier than was predicted. Now, big agriculture wants to repeat that process all over again with an old chemical called 2,4-D, an ingredient in the infamous defoliant Agent Orange. Critics are urging the USDA Monday to deny a proposal from Dow Chemical to approve a new genetically modified corn that they warn is a time bomb that will only lead to a repeat of the vicious cycle of superweeds all over again, a chemical arms race, they say, that nature will win.
So we're going to put Agent Orange on our farm crops?
Well, it's an ingredient of Agent Orange, which is said to not be the toxic part of Agent Orange.
I see. What could possibly go wrong?
Important to note, the public comment period ends this Friday. Make your voice heard at regulations.gov.
And that's, of course, even if you're in favor of Agent Orange on our farm crops.
Finally, President Obama mentions climate change. After slow jamming the news this week on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, President Obama finally started talking about climate change in a new interview in Rolling Stone. This after failing to mention climate change at all in his State of the Union address this year and in his Earth Day proclamation. Oh, if only he would slow jam the news on climate change.
For some reason, I don't think his mention of climate change in Rolling Stone is going to get quite the attention of his slow jam in the news on Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, yeah.
For more on all of our stories today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help us stay on your public airwaves with the Green News Report. We rely on you, at least until we get our own super PAC. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Probably a little bit slow on the draw with that second hour business, but it is. It's 16 minutes past the hour. This is the Horn. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid. And, well, let's go to the phones. Probably do that. That'd be all right. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello.
Ah, hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, a lot. Agent Orange?
Yeah.
Defoliant?
You know, I always like sweet butter on my corn, but I'll try anything.
Well, I don't know, Bob, but I don't think there is any portion of the chemical dioxin that is somewhat injurious.
I think you're right.
If you don't believe that, you can ask a number of Vietnam vets who are suffering from the after effects of its being used in that country to...
Right, and if you'll take the trouble to learn Vietnamese, they're dead. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about, you know, dead men tell no tales. And, of course, who developed that thing? Dow Chemical.
I do believe.
Mm-hmm. They made a lot of money off it.
Better living through chemistry. Wasn't that their 1960s ad slogan?
No, that was DuPont.
Oh, okay, so...
Yeah, but...
Well, Dow's been jealous ever since.
I guess they have, but Agent Orange, that's a... I mean, you know, haven't any of these people ever read Silent Spring that came back in the 1950s by Rachel Carson?
Well, yes, they have, as a matter of fact, Jim. And you know what they say about Silent Spring?
Oh, I'm sure they probably say a lot.
It's all a lie, and Rachel Carson was a sexual prevert.
A prevert?
Yeah, you know, just like that and he was a communist, and he wrote a prevert book called Sex Rebels. Never mind that it has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not the data in the book is right or wrong. The right wing is notorious for that kind of stuff.
Well, it reminds me of the scenes from the Manchurian Candidate when Senator Iceland would say, in 1 minute, there are 297 communists in the State Department. And then he couldn't get the number right, and finally Angela Lansbury across the table puts a bottle of Heinz 57 ketchup on the table, she said, how about trying to remember this number? There are 57 communists in the State Department.
There we... And you know, and that's and that you know and we've got our own modern version of that in that that freak from South Florida, Alan West. I mean, what a goon!
What's he been up to?
Well, he's running around saying that there are 75. No, there are 80. 83 and a half known communists in the House of Representatives. Really? No, he's been doing that, Jim. I said a long time ago that these right-wingers, they watch movies and they don't understand that they're not real. They think that the right-wingers like Alan West think that the Manchurian candidate is some sort of a documentary about a guy who got away with it.
Well, in a way, it was written to basically expose McCarthyism and what was going on back.
Right, but they also don't believe in McCarthyism either. Remember, Anthrax Coulter wrote an entire book saying that McCarthy was right. You know, just trashing the entire historical record and a level of historical revisionism that would make the Soviets blush.
Yeah, I heard something about that. That's just incredible how these people can get together and confab all these non-facts and stuff like that. Like I say, it would make Pravda in its best days.
I mean, if the Obamas had a multicultural Christmas tree and there was a Japanese Santa Claus on the tree, somebody like Sandy Rios would be out there talking to Cletus Brainhammer on AFA radio saying that it was a Chairman Mao Christmas ornament. That's what it was.
Well, you know, I belong to the YS Historical Association, and I get a lot of stuff from them, including their Christmas ornament every year and stuff like that. And I talked to one of the guys that I met when I was living in D.C., and I asked him about the condoms on the Clinton White House Christmas tree and the other things that you mentioned. And he just started laughing. He said, where in the world did you hear this? He said, there's no truth to that at all. Because, you know, the White House is a fairly open thing as far as decorations.
Sure. I mean, there's a whole tree lighting, right? Just like the one
on the Ellipse, and they have the Christmas tree surrounding the big Christmas tree from all the 50 states, and, you know, the lighting is the only thing that's, well, compared to it would be the lighting of the lantern during the cherry blossom season by the Japanese ambassador, but no, that's just crazy stuff. It's just crazy talk. I don't know where these people get this stuff, other than they just make it up and it's not even good fantasy. I mean, if you're going to indulge in fantasy, I mean, at least indulge in really good fantasy and good misinformation. But this is just so absurd.
Well, but they have to make it. I don't know. It's like my friend who would only, when he was a little baby, would only eat his vegetables if it was hidden behind a little pile of chocolate pudding. That's what his mother had to do to get him to eat it. And that's the way it is with these little right wingers. They're not terribly intelligent, and you have to make it so they can swallow it.
Palatable.
Yeah, and they can't chew a whole lot either, so they can't brain process much.
Radio personality around here used the word blowjob referring to Clinton yesterday on his hourly.
Oh my God! That pious general manager must have done had a baby in the office when that happened.
I called the station and I said, why is this man talking about blowjobs on your station? And within 30 seconds, he was apologizing.
Well, that's because that incredibly pious right-wing evangelical fundamentalist went running down the hall. He said, what? What did he say? He said, oh my God, oh dear, that's terrible.
Yeah, he said it right on the air and I thought to myself, you know.
Well, you know what you follow up and do next, Jim? You file an FCC complaint because that could get him something like a $475,000 fine and the same for the station management.
Well, that's an idea.
You just kind of have to note the date and time.
Yeah, well, I wrote it down.
Date, time, name of station, name of person uttering utterance, and mail it off, and they will have headaches for years over it.
Well, I think that particular gentleman has given them some headaches anyway. I think they become even embarrassed by the callers on that station.
Well, they're not embarrassed enough to get rid of him.
Yeah, I know. I know. I guess he's got enough connections around here to the radio community to maintain. But, of course, these people who are listening don't know what we're talking about, but this guy is just an absolute ridiculous person. And just the only reason I tune into him is just to hear what idiocy he's going to say and get a morning laugh out of it.
You tune into that program, Jim, for the same reason that people go to the monkey house. They know they're going to see monkeys flinging poo, but there's something entertaining about watching monkeys fling poo.
Yep. I guess you're right. And as far as the Donald is concerned...
Yeah, wasn't that precious?
I mean, who died and made him hall monitor?
Horrible.
I mean, he could probably stand in front of one of these windmills, and with enough hot air coming out of both ends of his body, he could probably drive one. And as far as that thing on his head is concerned, I'm still, every time I see him, I just wonder, that's not a hairpiece. No one would even make a hairpiece that bad. Or maybe it's, I don't know. I just wonder, does he use crazy glue or something like that? Do they make crazy glue in a spray or something?
Well, there have been photographs of him out in that aforementioned Scottish wind, Jim. And the thing on his head goes a little bit crazy.
He didn't have some kind of net on to keep it in place.
The hair product has not been made that can cope with Scottish wind. It just hasn't.
Well, it's pretty windy up there. It certainly is, and for him to get up there and, you know, he certainly thinks a great deal of himself. I mean, I would like to buy him for what his real value is.
And sell him for what he thinks he's worth.
I would be set for life, and you know. I've never seen such a person who is such an egotist, and you know he's just a complete idiot. And
well, he really is. But see, that's the way the American culture works. If you've got enough money, no one will tell you you're a moron.
Well,
we make that fundamental fatal mistake in this country of equating money with brains.
Well, you know what they say. If you're poor and do strange things, they say you're crazy. And if you're rich and do strange things, they think that you're just an eccentric.
Precisely.
So, I mean, it's, you know, so much for him, but God knows. I mean, what business does he have telling the Scots what to do with their energy supply?
Well, he's bought some of their land, so he thinks he owns the government. That's the way it works in America.
Well,
but the thing is, I read the whole story there. But yeah, the way the AP phrased it, that he breezed into the Scottish Parliament. I guess he had demanded the right to speak to them and said and correct them about horrible wind things, engines, and machines.
You know, the Scots are pretty hardy people. As a matter of fact, I'm one-fourth Scot. Or, let's see.
Well, they're also famously cranky.
Yeah, I got that, honestly, too. I think I'm one-fourth Scot, one-fourth... Oh, God, what am I as far as my family is concerned? I know most of it's French. So, you know, there it is. But, I mean, these people in the Scottish Parliament, when he addressed them, I wonder what they were thinking or what they were saying to themselves as this idiot made his wishes known.
And that's the failure of journalism, because what you really want is the interviews after it's all over going up to the Member of Parliament and saying, what are you thinking, letting them on talk? And then just, because the Scots will not hold back. They'll tell you what they think.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, they're extremely vociferous as far as what their opinions are, and they don't suffer fools gladly because it's a pretty hardy place in which to live, and they have a pretty turbulent history and have been known to, shall we say, give those people who try to give them a hard time an even harder time.
And then they're pretty industrious, too, and all thinky and stuff. Wasn't James Watt, or Alexander Watt, I forget, Alexander Watt, wasn't it? Wasn't he a Scotsman? Didn't they invent the steam engine in Scotland?
Oh, Scotland has contributed so much to a lot of things in the world. For example, like Donald McKay was one of the greatest clipper ship builders in the world, designers in the world, he was. And, I think his ship, the Flying Cloud, was the most beautiful sailing ship I've ever seen. I collect models of sailing ships, and I have one of the Flying Cloud. It's really a beautifully designed ship. And
well, you saw that they have reopened the Cutty Sark Museum, I trust.
No, I didn't.
I was actually glad to see that. You know, there was just a terrible fire. It was the last remaining clipper ship. Well, they've rebuilt her, and they've even put a museum underneath the Cutty Sark. And she was rededicated just a couple of days ago.
Hmm.
That would be something worth seeing. I love sailing ships. Just have an absolute unreasonable it's like when we were down and took the cruise on the Lib boat. And we had docked in Puerto Rico, and right there where our ship docked, sitting right next to it was a replica of the Bounty.
Oh, my.
It was the replica that they built for the Marlon Brando version of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Ferg and I went aboard. And, I mean, it's a full working model. They were getting her ready to sail across the Atlantic, because they do that every year. Long about April, they sail away from Puerto Rico in order to avoid the hurricane season and sail back to Europe with her.
Well, you might not remember the tall ships things they had for the 76
Bison. Oh, I do.
And, you know, some of those beautiful ships came from Russia. The Korzenstern and things like that. And speaking of model ships, I just dropped this as an aside. I did receive a 36-inch by 11 complete model wooden of the Titanic.
Oh my goodness, must be beautiful.
It is absolutely beautiful, and I place it on my dining room table, which is like a long refectory table. Of course, the shady lady likes to get up there
naturally,
and so I've had to do a little behavior modification for her and get.
And behavior modifying, did you say she's a 29-pound cat, Jim?
No, that's Rupert.
Oh, that's Rupert, okay.
Rupert is stretched out behind me right now on the back of the sofa, and stretched out, he covers 1.5 lengths of the 2 cushions.
When he lays around the house, he really lays around the house.
Well, he basically sort of, he's very, very diplomatic about his perches and things like that, and he's a very well-mannered cat. And to be part wildcat. But, I mean, thank God he didn't take a shine to that ship. My Lord in heaven, we would have had a disaster all over again. But I just told him, I said, look, I said, this is not, it means a great deal to me. And, you know, so basically we came to some type of understanding about that. And so, but... Like I say, I love model ships, and I love the sea, and I love, you know, the spirit of the adventure and things like that, of people who are on those ships, and it's just a part of me, you know, even going back to President Kennedy and his love for the sea. And of course we're getting far off the field here, but nonetheless, it sure as hell better than listening to those idiots talking about.
So true. Well, yeah, and like I said, it's the same thing that happened with me when Ferg and I boarded the Bounty down in Puerto Rico. I just walked around, and it's actually like a third larger than the real one was. And it's tiny. It's little itty-bitty, itsy-bitsy. I mean, you wouldn't a family of five living on the ground in America would find that to be a cramped quarters. And what I tried to impress upon Ferg at the time, Jim, was your ancestors came over here on something very like this, if not less so. And when you stop and just let that one roll around like a marble in your noggin for a little bit.
Well, you can definitely say this, that the Mayflower certainly didn't smell like one.
Amen.
And for those people who have, you know, taken that risk in those small ships and things of that nature, it's totally incredible to me.
Well, it speaks to the power of greed, really. Because every colony that the English planted, the Massachusetts Bay Colony included, had been predicated on the vast profits to be had in the New World. Because, of course, the Crown hoped that one of these people would find some more of that daggum gold or silver that the Spanish were all awash in, and they wanted them some.
Well, yeah, of course they did, because, I mean, the whole thing was predicated upon the model of the successes, and I use that word in quotation marks, of the Spanish in finding civilizations that use gold as a decorative thing, and how they were able to take it away. And, you know, of course, in so doing, they didn't care who died or who was mistreated or who was dispossessed, because of, you know, the only thing that mattered to them was the sailing of the flota every year. And so, I mean, that's what the Brits wanted to get on it, and so did the whole, you know, European expansion in the New World, as I've been gleaning from 1491, which I put on my Kindle, in 1493, which I have in hard copy. It's really quite interesting, actually.
Totally fascinating.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
And the further you dig into it, the more you're, it's not just your understanding that changes, but your complete view of this place.
What I wish that author would do is to author a book entitled The European Expansion into Africa. Now, that would be something to behold, because I've had 6 hours of courses in graduate.
That's all. Yeah, that's almost too. That's almost too much horror to swallow in one book, isn't it?
Well, you know, after you sort of read and understand what happened, you have to become inured to that sort of thing, because, I mean, it's like reading about the Holocaust. I mean, you have to step back from it.
Yeah, there are, in neither instance are there much in the way of happy asides.
No, there's no humanity, and there's a lot of grief and heartache and just absolute lacking of any form of humanity.
Well, and that's why it so pisses me off when people like that absolute, utter, uncontested moron John Racy, here in our state, Jim, says that him not being able to smoke in his public buildings is just like someone who had to wear the yellow Star of David on their clothing. It's more than a person of either conscience or brain or both should reasonably be expected to tolerate.
Well, I mean, I just don't think that analogy quite works. I really don't. I mean, for him to compare.
But you know, as I noted on the program last week, not only did he say it, when he was given a chance to say, well, you know, I misspoke, because the for-profit media will always run up to one of these miserable repiglicans who say this kind of crap and say, you didn't really mean to say that now, did you? And the smart repiglicans, or what passes for a smart one, will say, well, no, I didn't. I was taken out of context, and I misspoke. Which is the political and intellectual equivalent of saying I wasn't there, and even if I was there, I didn't do it, and if I did do it, I was only following orders. But in this case, John Racy doubled down and said, that's exactly what I meant.
Well, that's what he meant. I mean, that's his story, and he's sticking to it, but I still can't see too much of an analogy between people having to wear an 8-centimeter star, which would eventually lead them to an oven in Auschwitz, or how many other places where they did that sort of thing. I don't know how many there were that specialized in the decimation and in industrial combustible solution to the Jewish problem in Europe. But nonetheless, I that's just a terrible thing for someone to say, for him to compare the Holocaust to him not being able to smoke in a building, which I think is what he's trying to do. I don't know. I don't understand the workings of people like, the minds of people like that. And yet they make these outrageous statements and they just breeze right on by and just, you know, it's like, they've got some type of get out of jail free card in which they can do it. And I guess maybe money is probably the lubricant that allows them to slip by so easily, wouldn't you think?
You would, wouldn't you?
I would think so, yeah.
But you know, those kind of statements and the continuing political viability of the candidate who makes them, those turn November plebiscites, as I've said before, from mere elections into IQ tests for the people of either a district or a state or a nation. And we have reached a point in the American experience, Jim, where we as a group, not you nor I, or the Horn family for that matter, but as a nation, we have developed a real tendency for failing these IQ tests. The election in 2000 was a national IQ test that the American people actually passed, but the Supreme Court of the United States failed. And then in 2004, we got another IQ test and failed it. And that's when that one newspaper in Britain published that headline that said, How can 54 million or whatever it was, 52 million people be that stupid or so stupid, as to reelect George W. Bush?
Well, I think I remember from 2004 to 2004, all the machinations that went on behind that. And, of course, to reelect George Bush, they had to re-engineer voting machines and things of that nature. And
oh, the 2000 election was a boondoggle, and even 2004, the Ohio election there, looks really, really, Ohio was stolen too. Those are two stolen elections.
What was the company who designed the machine?
Diebold,
yeah.
And then there's ES&S, and then the guy who was central to it all and was getting ready to drop the dime got on a small aircraft because he just loved to fly airplanes. And you know what, Jim?
I guess he kind of...
Damn thing crashed.
Well, are you surprised? Are you really surprised? I mean, you know, dead men tell no tales. And I think people like Albert Anastasia and some of the other dons of that period, they always believed in one thing. Don't leave any... Or Lucky Luciano... One thing you don't do, you don't leave behind any witnesses.
Yeah, they can just ruin everything for you. Jim, it's been a wonderful conversation. Have a great evening, my friend.
Oh, one more thing. I want to hear, you were talking about people
yes.
breaking wind or something like that, weren't you?
I don't know, but even if I wasn't, I want to hear this.
Well, I think I told you this story before, but it happened to me when I was in, like, the Kroger and I was in the checkout line, and well, I had to, and so I farted, but it was like what they call the silent but deadly.
No.
And this woman behind me actually tapped me on the shoulder and asked me, "Did you fart?" And I looked at her and I said, "I certainly did, but I don't always smell like this."
Jim. Oh, God.
I mean, what she expects, Chanel number 5 or White Diamonds, I don't know. But, I mean, you know, I mean, even the Pope farts, the Queen farts, they all fart, and we have to, and sometimes you just can't control it.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, you got to assume that...
But for her to tap me on the shoulder and ask me that, and I started to just say...
That didn't whistle Dixie, lady.
Want to pull my finger and Maybe I shouldn't have relayed that story on the
No, that's okay. That's more than okay, Jim.
Well, like I told you a long time ago, I had this album called Pull My Finger. And I used to, every time when our friend over at your former radio station would get on the air, and he had enough time to have calls, and he could have call waiting like you do. He doesn't anymore. You can only have one call to the show. Whenever he would say, who am I talking to? I would hit the remote on my CD thing, so it would give forth this tremendous explosion of wind. And it would get him all upset. Well, he knew he was doing it.
Well, of course.
And so, you know, we each have to have our own little way of getting back at some of these outrageous stuff that we hear.
Fight the system, brother. Fight the system.
But, I mean, the sound that was coming out of the speakers from that CD made a hell of a lot more sense than what these people are saying that I heard you play earlier. And about all these communists in the State Department and all these remarks about the president and this, that, and the other. It's just absolutely absurd. I mean, even on Don Imus for the last couple of nights, mornings, even they have become alarmed because of some of the low-grade rhetoric that's coming out.
Well, you know, I took listener advice, Jim, and quit watching Morning Mika. On MSNBC, just for the sake of my own sanity. But I was reading along today, and I guess they decided to explain why it is that Willard Romney is going to be the nominee of the Republican Party. And poor old Mike Barnicle said, listen, he's just not as scary. He said the Republican electorate had a good look at Newt Gingrich, and they had a good look at Rick Santorum, and they had a good look at Ron Paul. And they came back to Mitt Romney and said, you know what? He doesn't scare us as much.
Well, he's a little more polished, and he has a little more of a...
Well, no, he has... Yeah, he's got the essential character of... what did David in Tennessee call it a little bit ago? A bowl of tapioca pudding that stutters?
Yeah, I mean, basically. And, you know, when your basic mode is Etch-a-Sketch, when he says one thing and then turns right around and says something else, and... tries to make it all palatable, and you know Romney, I think, is in his own perverted way trying, in his sense of the essence of the situation, be all things to all people. But that's going to be an interesting election. I don't know if I'll be around to see it, but nonetheless, may I ask you one thing? How do you think that's going to come out?
I cannot conceive. You know, the for-profit media are doing all in their power to make this a viable election. I cannot conceive of Willard Romney winning the presidency. I mean, I have more than my fair share of issues with President Obama. I know you do too. But the difference between him and Willard. I mean, I don't, you know, it's not so much I don't want to think about November 7th or January 20th, 2013 with the inauguration of a will. I can't imagine the American people will do that to themselves. On the other hand, however, what really gives me the turtle squirts, Jim, is the idea of what 2014 looks like, or 2015, after we've had two or three years of what could very easily be a Willard Romney president coupled to a right-wing extremist House and a right-wing extremist Senate.
It certainly appears as though that's you know, going to happen in those out years. But when it comes to the oncoming election of 2012, I mean, I'm going to have to contradict Mae West, who said when she was confronted between the lesser two evils, she always took the one she never tried, and Romney is certainly one that I don't want to try, and I hope other people don't, and I hope they don't try to finagle this election in his behavior, or in his, not behavior, but in his favor. But, I mean, they're trumpeting today and by every means that they possibly can, saying that Romney will prevail over the current.
Well, it's like that stupid email I got from Willard's campaign earlier today, saying that if I don't support him, I'm not an American who wants America to be better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a hell of a lot of presumption in a statement like that. I desperately want America to be better because, you know, I've got children and grandchildren. And as such, an America that is better than it is now is of critical import to me. But the thing is, every policy that Willard Romney proposes makes things worse.
Yeah, it does. But the thing that frightens me so much is the fact that, you know, this has happened in history before when people have run for elections, like in Germany in the 30s, and how these strange, but, you know, men with their unusual solutions are catapulted into power by hook or crook or anything.
Right,
else.
And yeah, it's not like I think that there's going to be an army of clean-cut boys on bicycles with the plain black pants and plain white shirts and skinny ties just crawling all over America to convert me to the Mormon theocracy. I don't think that. But you don't need that. It doesn't matter whether he's that or a Hindu or Shinto or animist or anything else. It is the fact that he is an economic anarchist and an economic royalist. And I know this, the two don't seem to go together, but they do very much, because what we will do is promote anarchy in the economic working class in order to better that class of undeclared royalty that exists in this country. And of course they are self-appointed as well.
But I don't think our economy is going to withstand too much more of that, you know? I really don't think, as you were saying that earlier with earlier speakers conversation this afternoon, that basically we're not at a stage of Emperor Claudius. We're basically at the time of Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah, that was last night's conversation with Sandra. And yeah, we are deeper into the stuff than we know.
I would think so, and I think definitely the handwriting is on the wall as far as that's concerned. Well, look, I've taken up enough of your time, and I wish you all the best with your procedures and things of that nature. I regret that they can't be done endoscopically, but nonetheless, when do you plan to do this?
Well, I've got an appointment to discuss it next week, and then we'll look at some scheduling. And
do you plan to be on the road in that condition, Bob?
Oh yeah, I don't have a choice.
Well, yes, you do.
I've made these commitments, and the thing is, it's not going to get any better, Jim, with me just sitting around. The travel isn't what does it. It's it is this rotten thing inside me, and it's not going to be I just go around and I drink broth and I drink soup and I don't consume fatty foods, and things get better, or things are tolerable. It's when apparently I make terrible mistakes, like eating the macaroni and cheese from the Dirksen Senate Office Building cafeteria, that I get myself in trouble.
Oh, wow. That can be a bit of a sticky wicket, can't it?
Well, you know, I am powerless over macaroni and cheese, and I admit it.
Well, I can understand that, but I mean, I was just wondering about being on the road with a situation like that. That might not be a very good idea. I'm just passing that on to you.
Well, I mean, what it boiled down to is, you know, they kept me there in the hospital to run some tests to make sure that my appendix wasn't exploding, to make sure that it wasn't something that they didn't think it was. And, I come away from the experience, though it will be a, you know, $5,000 or $7,000 experience, I come away from the experience at least knowing that all these years, and, oh, it's your pancreas, Buster. No, it's your gallbladder. And that can, well, it's like I mentioned in that story of John Ashcroft last night. It was his pancreas that lit up his gallbladder. And it's a real pain when that happens. And you have to learn to manage it until you can unmanage it. So I'm hoping maybe we can have a conversation and sometime in mid-June maybe get this damn thing out, because that'll give me time to go out and stand on a street corner and sell pencils or something until I can get the money for the surgery.
Well, economic considerations are extremely important, something like that, particularly if you're not insured and you don't have that type of coverage. And
well, even if I got insurance tomorrow, because you know the insurance industry makes their own rules, if I got insurance coverage tomorrow, it would not cover this surgery. It would be a pre-existing condition.
You know, one last thing. My mother had that surgery several, 12 years ago, 10 years ago. And basically what they did, they took a fiber optic instrument with a clip, and they just went in and snipped it off and removed it. That was it. That was all there was to it. There was no invasive procedure, no inflation of the abdomen or anything like that.
Yeah, laparoscopy. I don't know why I always have such a hard time saying that. That's how that procedure works. And they, fiber optics and cameras and little scalpels and little clamps and stuff on the ends of little tiny wires. And because it gets pretty little tiny inside you, and
it does. I don't have a lot of room to maneuver.
But it's been done to my wife. It's been done to my two daughters. And
I remember you talking about that, and I was just wondering about that. But anyway, to make a long story short, all my best to your procedure, and may this, as they say, as the judge said to that guy in Midnight Express, may this pass quickly.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Thank you, Jim. Have a good evening.
And you too, sir.
Bye. Our good buddy Jim, where is the time going? Dear God, it's 5 minutes till 8 here on the East Coast. And this is frustrating because the clock that I really, really rely on, the one on the wall that's tuned to the atomic clock in underneath some mountain somewhere, it says that it's 6 minutes past 8. Every other clock in this house says that it's 4 minutes till. So I don't know, maybe she needs new batteries. Or maybe after all these years she's done, but has there been some time quake at the atomic clock or something like that? I don't know. But no, it's about 4 minutes to, before the hour, and if you want to get in on the conversation, I heartily welcome you to do so. You know the number, 304-658-3333. That's direct dial. If you need us to carry the freight on the long distance, it's 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And jump right in. The conversation is fine. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Well, howdy, Kevin. How are you?
All right. How are you doing?
You probably have a pretty good idea.
Actually, I was just thinking when Jim was talking about that, the phrase, may this pass quickly, will come to mind many times after you have the surgery. They will constantly ask you, have you passed gas? So just think of that. Every time they ask you, may this pass quickly.
It'll be just like the woman behind Jim in the Kroger, right?
Right, exactly.
Did you? Why, yes, as a matter of fact, I did. Isn't it lovely?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Although I loved Jim's expression, what did you expect? Chanel number 5, white diamonds?
Exactly. Well, if you can ask a question, I guess you get an answer, right?
Bingo.
So, anyway, I just wanted to call and check in with you since you were out the first couple of days here this week and kind of talk about a little medicine today. At least I have Medicare and Medicaid, but it really is frustrating dealing with doctors today because in my particular case, you know, I can't get them to do anything. And I question how much of that is because I only have Medicare and Medicaid. You know, I have ran into good doctors, in my various times. Like when I had my gallbladder removed, they did it the same night. But then I ran into these doctors who, if they run one test and it comes back normal, they're not going to check into the problem any further than that.
No, that's the nice thing. Any kidding aside, they ran a ton of tests isolating all this stuff and made sure it wasn't a hot appendix because my appendix is not where it's supposed to be. It's actually over. If you look down at your navel, if you were me, your appendix would be over in the lower left of your abdomen. It's really challenging. And under the circumstances, they wanted to make sure it wasn't that, and it wasn't. And what was more heartening was to find, because, you know, getting, you know, cross your fingers, getting rid of this gallbladder won't be so much of a big deal, whereas getting rid of a pancreas most assuredly is. I think Peter O'Toole drank his pancreas into submission in the late 1970s, had to have his removed. He's up in his 80s now, but he had to quit drinking and start taking a couple of insulin shots every day, you know, because he didn't have anything to make insulin. So, you know, I really don't want that to happen, and I'm trying to be as positive about all this as I possibly can be, use it to lose a little weight, cut the blood sugars, cut the fats, watch the triglycerides go down, and just be a whole new and different Bob.
Yep.
Like Sandra was mentioning last night, take the opportunity to give up the filthy cigarettes, and everything will be better.
One hopes.
Yeah, well, I mean, all taken with the caveat that Robin Williams once mentioned about getting sober when he said, I thought I would be such a much better person, but it turned out I would go to cocktail parties and they'd say, and everybody would be standing around drinking wine or liquor or beer or whatever, and he'd say, you know, I'll just be over in the corner kicking the cat.
Yep. Yep, I've experienced that, but you have to stand up for your principles in some cases. And with you, it being a matter of health, that would take precedence over, you know, actually taking a drink and suffering the consequences of that later on down the road.
Well, for me, just if I could just shed about 50 pounds, I think I would be, I think I would be an amazing, I really would be a different person. I could wear old suits again if the moths haven't, you know, done their damnedest to them.
Well, I'm kind of surprised you haven't lost a whole lot of weight having gone back and forth to the Dirksen Senate building.
Well, that's the other thing. If I was over there walking as much as I walked during those few days, I wouldn't have any triglycerides in my body, and my blood sugar would be, well, I could give up the little pill that I take. So that's something else we're working on, is getting something where I can reasonably try to get some exercise in every day.
Well, you sound like you're going to have the opportunity to do that if you do go to these appointments next week. Isn't it next week you're going back over there to Washington?
No, I go. My next trip is on the 4th of May to Boston, and I'm gone 5 days. I'm gone to Boston for 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, I think, or 4th, 5th, and 6th, and then 7th, 8th, and 9th, I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay.
Jesus, it sounds like I'm describing some sort of appearance schedule. You know, and I'll be at Harrah's in Reno. These are all events designed to raise awareness of what is being done to us here in Appalachia. And these particular events are organized by our good friends at the Rainforest Action Network. And I'll be speaking in Boston, and I'll be speaking in Charlotte, and hopefully. Explaining in patient detail what it means to be poisoned to death for profit.
Yes, and the more people that will speak out, the more people will take the opportunity to be informed, the more people you will have speaking out on the issue. So you're doing a service in that way also.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. I don't, you know, I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything like that. It's just my simple feeling, Kevin, is that it is one thing to sit and talk about something, but when it is right up on top of your life, if you don't get it up off your ass and go do something, anything, that is within your ability, then you're shortchanging yourself, and you're shortchanging whatever it is that you believe in. So
yeah.
I have to go do this.
I understand how you feel because of issues out here in Colorado, and it is sometimes daunting to attempt to go to some of these things, but if you believe in the principle, whatever it is, if you believe in that idea, not ideal, idea, then it's worth taking the time and effort to actually go to these protests, marches, speaking engagements, whatever, to make a difference. So, you know, I can relate, though, because that's been part of our conversation here locally is, you know, almost like how much do you want it? Almost like a football coach would ask a football player, how much do you want it? Kind of thing. And I think that's one of the things that troubles me sometimes is that, and I'm putting myself in this category, sometimes people complain, they want to complain and grouse, but they don't want to take action to make the offending party or thing go away. And just like the election, Jim asked you about the election, and I was thinking, you know, I'm considering 04 and 2000 and the state of the Republican Party right now. If Romney somehow won that election, I'd have to be out protesting because there's just no way that I could see Romney winning this election without something being rigged.
I don't forget. You can tell the degree of desperation involved by the degree of manufactured outrage, Kevin. It was, I think it was earlier today, Phil Gingrey, not Gingrich, but Gingrey, he is, however, also from Georgia. He's a nasty, nasty, nasty man. Had himself a little old on-air hissy, or maybe in-print hissy, about the fact that Barack Obama, that his campaign has founded an organization called African Americans for Obama. Well, how dare the president engage in this politics of racial divisiveness? Now, mind you, we've had how many years of birtherism? We've had how many years of the freaking Tea Party? But suddenly, Phil Gingrey just noticed he's outraged. All them dark people going to vote for him anyway. What's he got to go and make an organization like that for? Of course, he was totally quiet when George Bush created conservatives conservative African Americans for Bush or African Americans for McCain in 2008 or, you know, any of those. If Mitt Romney, if he put together a group said white folks for Romney, there'd be riots in the streets.
Yeah, right.
So, understand, even the Repiglicans know, Kevin, that they've got a cipher for a candidate. They have, if ever there was a candidate who represented the functional, if not actual equivalent, of none of the above, yep. He's running for president on the GOP ticket in 2012.
Yep. And you can tell that by the way the Republicans, what was it you said earlier, the Republicans, like, he was nominated almost through the process of elimination.
Yeah, that was Mike Barnicle on Morning Mika this morning.
Yeah.
He's the one that didn't scare them the most.
That's it. And that's true. That probably is, there's a lot of truth to it. But Romney actually scares me in a sense more than Santorum would, because Romney is, and everybody knows he is. If the wind's blowing this way, that's the way he's going. He constantly speaks to both sides of an issue, and in this day and age, a politician can't do that because of the internet and you know, everything you say is known and can be kept for years and years.
And will be used against you in the court of public opinion.
Exactly. So, I just, I don't know what it's going to take for America to wake up. And in fact, the Republicans, if there are any left in the party of the rank and file, they're the ones that need to start standing up and saying.
But they're not. I don't know that there are any left. And if there are, they're under such deep cover that they dare not speak out because, see, they're scared to death of their own. What the hell do they have to fear from kumbaya Democrats? Oh, please.
Nope.
They're scared of the damn teabaggers. Now, I mean, consider, who's that senator from Utah? Orrin Hatch. Now, this guy has been in office so long that it should be a foregone conclusion. I mean, it's Utah, right?
Yep.
Well, the way Utah's state politics are set up, he had to win like 51% of his primary vote in order to just be the nominee in November.
Yep.
Kevin, he didn't win it.
Yeah, I know.
He missed it by a percentage point, so now he's got to go through an entire runoff process against what? A teabagger. And the teabaggers are out there going hammer and tongs against an absolute right-wing jackass like Orrin Hatch. I mean, you know, I'll never forgive that evil bastard for what he did to Anita Hill.
Yep.
But he has to face a runoff because the teabaggers are mad at him that he isn't a weird enough right-winger. The teabaggers are mad at him because he wasn't running around screaming that Barack Obama is a Muslim socialist Kenyan with deep-seated hatred of white people and a distaste for an anti-colonialist policies. They're angry about that because, you see, the teabaggers, Kevin, are they are mental Lilliputians, and that's an insult to Lilliputians. They have tiny, itsy-bitsy little lizard brains that, I mean, the brain of a hummingbird performs more functions than a teabagger brain does. And so when Orrin Hatch doesn't say everything just right, they punish him in Utah to make sure that he understands that they want to take him down.
Yep.
And the same thing's going on in Arizona. Jeff Flake, I think, is his name.
Yep.
And he is a complete right-wing horse's ass, always has been, always will be. But lo and behold, he's having to run against a teabagger for his Senate primary, and the teabagger has a shot because the right wing in Arizona have gone completely, absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach.
Yep.
And the teabaggers control Arizona right wing politics, and the right wing generally controls Arizona politics. Whoever the Democrat's going to be that's going to run in that election doesn't have a chance. And, you know, that goes all the way back to people like, you know, Barry Goldwater and whatever. But those Barry Goldwater Republicans, they're damn liberals now.
Yep.
Who was it? Was it John Huntsman the other day? Or no, I can't remember. Some Republicans said that Ronald Reagan could not get elected, could not get nominated for the presidency by the Republican Party of 2012. And it's true. And that's the thing. That is not to say that Ronald Reagan was not a right-winger. That's not to say that Richard Nixon was not a right-winger. But every now and then they would throw some little symbolic bone to the Democrats who would roll over on their backs to get scratched on the belly by them.
Yep.
And they understood the value of that. But the teabaggers that control Republican politics now are interested in none of that. They want it all, and they want it all, and they want to tear it all down to the ground. They want to rip at it with their teeth. I mean, they want to just have an orgy.
Well, I hope they don't get it.
And that's what we face in November.
Well, I'm doing all I can to make sure that that doesn't happen. I know with Ryan talking about, and this is what amazes me, that anybody would vote for these Republicans, because Ryan talking about doing away with food stamps, but yet you want to give tax deductions to the rich.
Well, see, but Ryan will get the phone will ring in Paul Ryan's office, and Paul Ryan will pick it up on the food stamp thing. Because the primary beneficiary, and this can never be said quite enough, Kevin, the primary beneficiary of food stamps is not the people who eat the foods.
Yep.
If that was the case, then the federal government would simply go back to the old model of distributing food to hungry American people. It was the best damn cheese that has ever been made, you know.
Yep.
Well, we were talking about me being powerless to resist macaroni and cheese. That's part of the reason. Every now and then, somebody would give my dad that they had gotten, and they didn't. Well, I don't like it. And they'd give my dad one of these things, and my dad, okay, give it here. You got any more? And he'd bring home one of these blocks of government cheese and hand it to my mother, and say, Margaret, we're having macaroni and cheese Sunday. And my mother would say, yes, Kenneth. And she would make a couple of pans of baked macaroni and cheese that, oh, sweet Jesus, Kevin. It was the stuff that
yep.
dreams are made of.
Yep.
And if the federal government's goal with the food stamp program was to actually feed hungry people, you know, you can give out unbranded bags of rice. You can give out unbranded bags of flour. You can give out unbranded bags of sugar. You can give out beans. You can give out corn. You can give out cheese and milk and butter and eggs. You know, the essential staples of living. And maybe then you give out a voucher so you can go to the grocery store and get some meat, you know, with pink slime. But that's not what the food stamp program does. The food stamp program is a delivery vehicle of federal dollars for the retail grocery industry. And so when I say that the phone's going to ring in Paul Ryan's office and he's going to take the call, it's going to be because, Congressman Ryan, there's a very angry man on the phone. He says he's from, let me look here. He says he's from Bentonville, Arkansas. And he wants to talk to you, and he says, now. He said something about, I don't buy congressmen to have them stab me in the back. Should I tell him that you're out, Congressman Ryan? Oh, no. No, I'm taking the call, because it's Walmart, Kevin.
Yep.
It's Walmart. And when they get wind of the fact that the humongous windfall profit that they get every month is about to go away. No, that'll dry up in a hurry. Because see, if they piss off Walmart, I think it was John Boehner the other day who said that there's a 1/3 chance that the House will that the Republicans will lose their House majority in November.
Yep.
Devoutly to be wished, but. That's the kind of thing that will make them lose their majority.
Yep.
Because it ain't just Walmart, you know. It's Ralph's and
Kroger
and the other big regional grocery stores. You know, whether it's Food Lion or Aldi or all of it, they will raise three shades of holy hell. Because the food stamp program, or actually a food card program now, it's more like a credit card, I guess.
Yep.
Is
managed, at least mine is managed by Chase Bank.
Who gets a cut.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, and by the way, Chase Bank will be calling Mr. Ryan too.
Yep.
You see how it works.
And this continual outcry toward taking away from the poor to give tax breaks to the rich, I can't understand, unless you're part of that 1% or 1/10 of 1%, how you could even logically, intellectually, even think about supporting something like that. But I still hear people all the time that's a great idea, get these people out to work. Well, what if you can't work? You know? And it scares me being in the position I'm in, because there's not much I can do about my, where I'm at, my position, so to speak. And what do you do? I mean, there's not much I can do other than protest, but I'm talking about realistically, all I can do is hope that when something like a Ryan budget comes up for a vote, that it's a Democratic House and a Democratic Congress there to defeat it. And then if that doesn't work, a Democratic president to veto it. But, you know, sometimes you don't have real faith that this Democratic president is going to veto something like that, because he is trying to make nice with them, which is pointless, because they never want to compromise with you. So why compromise with them? And that's all you can do, is stand by and watch. After you've done everything else, that's basically what it boils down to, standing by and watching. And hoping that somebody in our Congress and House and Senate has enough common sense to realize that they're cutting poor people's throats, and when you cut the poor 99% throats, sooner or later you're cutting your own throat. It just may take a little longer to get to you, but you're cutting your own throat. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kevin, I appreciate the conversation this evening. Good to hear from you, and I hope we will talk soon.
I don't know if you heard me just a minute ago, Bob, closing the windows and that. I'm out here in Colorado. It got up to 80-something today, and we're getting thunderstorms tonight.
Well, it's early March cold here, and the rain that's been falling all day, both in and out of the house, I might add, has been anything but pleasant.
Yeah, my point in saying that is, you know, I've come to the point that there's no way I can deny the existence of global warming. You just see it in the weather every day, and you shake your head at what the weather's like. I mean,
but no. See, they can deny anything, Kevin. I just got an email in from our buddy Dr. John up in New York, and it's from a magazine called the Texas Observer. And it's the name of the article is Tracking Creation in Glen Rose, and it's a very long article, and I don't have time to go into all of it, but if you look for Tracking Creation in Glen Rose, you will be losing it. Because I presume you've got some sort of a reader on your machine, right?
Oh, yeah.
It'll be reading to you for a while, and I'll guarantee you that there will be portions you will reach inside this article where you will start screaming at the box, Kevin.
Yep.
You'll be saying, shut up! Shut up! That's not true! You can't say that! Shut up! Or at least if I were in your circuit, I would find myself talking to the box. Because there are fossilized dinosaur tracks in Glen Rose, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a Glen Rose, Texas Dinosaur Track Museum.
Yep.
You ready for this?
Yep.
At the Glen Rose, Texas Dinosaur Track Museum, there is a display, a diorama, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows, on a scale that is absolutely ponderous to consider, it shows dinosaurs walking up to the ark.
Oh,
to Noah's ark, Kevin. And they say that there's a track there, and it's obvious it is a human footprint that is underneath the dinosaur track. Now, bear in mind that if it's a human footprint, it is Fred Flintstone's footprint, because it ain't got no arch. It is flat as a pancake. And is almost as broad at the heel as it is at the ball of the foot, which is generally not a human foot, but it's a human footprint. But because they're fundies and because
They can avoid anything they want to. That's just not what I believe, Bob. They completely miss the idea that if that's a human footprint, it is a human footprint that has since evolved.
Yep.
Into the footprint we have today. Yeah, of course, it's not a human footprint. It's the footprint of another dinosaur that actually dropped its heel when it walked instead of walking all tippy-toe like say, the Tyrannosaurs did.
Yep.
But, I got the email just a little bit ago from Dr. John where he said, faced with the presence of, and Dr. John's a scientist, of course. He's an archaeologist.
No.
He said, his subject line was, can you hear my head desking? You know, kawomp, kawomp. He said, faced with the presence of an amazing scientific phenomenon in their own backyard, what do these ass-picking fundies do? One, make shit up to bolster their faith, and two, plant fake evidence.
Oh.
They must be acting as God's instruments, huh? Unbelievable, says Dr. John. So this is a read that is worth every minute that it will take you. It is at TexasObserver.org, Tracking Creation in Glen Rose. It was published April the 9th.
I imagine I could go to TexasObserver.org and track it down from there just as easy a bit.
Yeah, and the thing is, the scale of this Noah's Ark in the diorama,
mm-hmm.
there are modern pine trees growing around it, you know, not like old, you know, no, they're not giant ferns or anything. And there is a boarding gangplank up into the ark, and there's a dinosaur on it. And there are little people who are maybe a fourth the size of the dinosaurs in the diorama. And here's the fun part. These great big dinosaurs are dwarfed. The trees are dwarfed by the size of this ark. Human technology right here, right now, would be hard-pressed, if at all possible, to make a wooden boat the size of this ark.
Yep.
But because they can't simply say we believe it, they have to palm this stuff off on the innocently ignorant as some sort of fact.
Yep.
I guess I'll never be in Glen Rose, Texas, and it's a good thing, because I would start screaming and tearing. I would tear at my clothing, and I would rend my clothing and be as a wild beast of the field running around in there the minute I set eyes on this thing.
Oh.
You know, I remember when Reverbo used to suggest that it would be really cool if we all had matching horn jackets and could go on a field trip to the Creation Museum in Kentucky. And I used to agree it would be great fun, but by the same token, I cannot guarantee my own conduct in such a situation.
Yeah. And the trouble with these people is that they can't think outside the box enough to even allow for any of their theory to be even slightly out of bounds.
I mean, this quote, Kevin, is precious, charming, stunning. Stultifying, stupefying. Most everyone in Glen Rose that I know, believes man and dinosaurs coexisted, Alice Lance tells me at the annual tractor pull. The only conflict we have is when people move from metropolitan areas and have different value systems. I think some don't have a strong religious belief system, and they're more likely to go with science than faith.
Yep. And that says it all right there.
Because science and faith are the same thing. They exist on the same continuum. They're on the same plane together, and one may choose science or one may choose faith. Because they're just different ways of approaching life.
Yep.
It has gotten to the point that the evangelicals and the fundies and so whatnot cannot differentiate the fact that one is religion and the other is science, and that science is not religion and religion is not science. It drives them crazy. Just like earlier in the program, the only thing that managed to drive Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan away from the tender embrace of Ayn Rand was the fact that she was an atheist. Not that her economic policy of or philosophy of the positives of selfishness were somehow sick, twisted, and psychotic. That they were some sort of economic psychobabble. No, none of that. No, the only thing that ever ran him away was the fact that she was an atheist.
Yep.
The fact that Ayn Rand was an atheist is about the only damn thing that she has to recommend her in my book.
Yep. Well, when it says something for someone's thought process, when you're going to, whoever the person is, Ayn Rand or whomever, you're going to disqualify what they say because they're an atheist. Simply because of that. You know, like, in their world, anything the atheist says has to be nonsense, and therefore, I'm not going to believe anything, even if he tells me the world is round, you know. And that is another thing that just drives me crazy, is you can't consider another viewpoint because you're so clouded with prejudice or whatever word you want to use, and... That kind of tells you something about the person when they say something like that. So,
indeed,
I don't know. It does give an reason why people can be so easily led, and that's something we've got to change. But I guess,
and I don't know. I don't know if we can. I don't know if we can.
Exactly.
Kevin, have a good night, my friend.
All right.
Take care. Bye now.
And good luck on the surgery.
I appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.
Surgery's not scheduled, but I'll take all the luck I can get. Just to update you, in case you're not watching, with their first pick in the NFL draft, the Indianapolis Colts did, in fact, choose Andrew Luck of Stanford. Washington picked second and took Robert Griffin III. Good luck to him. There can't be enough good things happen for that young man, as far as I'm concerned. The Cleveland Browns took Trent Richardson from Alabama. And if he pans out, he could be literally a game changer there. And yes, Marty, yes. And all those updates are courtesy of Marty, by the way. Yes, Marty, these people think that man and dinosaur coexisted. I know. What do you think it does to me? But there you go. That's just, you know, it's where we live. It's our reality. And it's a terrifying reality to realize that these are the kinds of people who do things like select people to run the country. That quote is just mind-boggling to me. Biology teacher Wendy Thompson says that students sometimes ask about the exhibits, including evidence of human footprints alongside those of dinosaurs they've seen at the local Creation Evidence Museum, or ask questions informed by their religious views. One student recently told Thompson how she and her father reconciled evolution with the Genesis account. God created the sun and the moon on the fourth day. Before that, a day, the student reasoned, could have been millions of years long. I just listened to her, Thompson says. It's kind of a touchy thing. And then there's Mary Adams, the niece of George Adams, who found the dinosaur tracks more than a century ago. Recently delivered a presentation to youth at the First Baptist Church warning them against belief in evolution.
If we were not created by God,
the 87-year-old moron tells me,
there's no one to whom we are accountable. We can live exactly as we please.
I I thought these fundies believed in free will. That's living as you please, isn't it? Instead, they have to... They what?
We live in fear of a great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky who's prone to smiting us for no good reason. He smites. I've seen people smited. It was not pretty. And therefore, I does everything that God says. I hates everything God says for me to hate in His book of love.
She says that the theory of evolution is,
it's the worst thing that ever happened to me.
It's pathetic. A creation evidence museum. And there's one thing, though, that sneaks into all this. Those man tracks. Were dummied up. Most locals know that. This is again from the article. Most locals know that fake fossils have been in Glen Rose since the 30s. The first fossil carvers had economic motives, not religious ones. Until the 70s, Somerville County, where Glen Rose is located, was one of the poorest counties in Texas, several locals tell me. Chopping cedar posts and making moonshine were important sources of income. During Prohibition, Glen Rose was known as the moonshine capital of Texas. Yeah. They carved fake fossils to support their fake religion. No surprise in that. One of the bedrocks of the Christian faith is the fact that Constantine, the Emperor Constantine, sent his mama to the Holy Land to get relics of the crucifixion. And you know, when she got to Jerusalem, there was somebody on every street corner going, "Hey lady, you want to buy a piece of the true cross? I got one right here. Yeah, I got one of the nails. I got the nails over here. Hey, look at this. Look at this right here. This little bitty piece of cloth. Yeah, that's a piece of his robe, Your Highness. Now, what do I want for it? Ah, it's cheap. Two talents of gold. How would that be? Bargain, you say? I think so, too. Here you go. Let me know if you got any more money, because I got a piece of the Virgin Mary's headgear. It's the very dummied up artifacts are the very foundation of organized Christianity. Let's move on. I'll get all mad and I'll ruin my night. Oh, this is a fun one. I mean, not really. Lawyer and his ex-wife plied teenage babysitter with drink and drugs and raped her. This is more a story about how you find things out in the world of failed for-profit journalism than it is of it. I mean, sadly, it seems like there's one of these stories every other day. This one has to do with a hotshot lawyer in Georgia and his now ex-wife. They're waiting a trial on charges of raping their 18-year-old babysitter. Joseph Neal. That'd be Joe Neal, Jr. He's 43. And Caroline Neal, she's 23. They got a divorce. They were both indicted on felony charges back in March after a teenage girl said they plied her with booze and pot and then tried to have sex with her at their home in Somerville, Georgia, last year. So it turns out that Joe Neal Jr. is a former assistant prosecutor. And if you... And I thought, Georgia, prosecutor, probably tough on crime. Golly, I wonder what party he's from. And I also would like to know a little bit about the mindset that says, honey, let's go home tonight and liquor up the babysitter and get it on. She's 18 after all, right? She says that they gave her 4 to 5 alcoholic beverages and marijuana before Joe Neal Jr. had carnal knowledge of her without her consent and without her will. Come on, Joe. Go hire a hooker. Well, that wouldn't be moral. Joe Neal looks, Jr. looks a little bit like Tucker Carlson. So then I started digging through trying to find out about who Joe Neal Jr. was, and I went to his webpage. Oh, brother. His law office webpage talks about him being a lawyer who lives the warrior way. Hmm, says I. He has a very self-congratulatory biography. I mean, an ego that just won't quit. And I root, and I root, and I root, and I root, and then I find it. A picture of him standing with Georgia Speaker of the House, Bubba Fingerbutt. So I look up Bubba on the Google. And there he is. Bubba is a family values. Everybody say it. 1, 2, 3. Republican. And I mean, Joe had his arm around Bubba's neck, grinning like a possum eating shit out of a wire brush. So there you have it. Upstanding, tough on crime, family values Republican, goes home with wife to get the babysitter liquored up and have sex with her. Well, I was drinking too. Marty, you are a very, very bad man. Talk about adventures in babysitting. You are a bad man, Marty. Bad. Oh, this guy's website was not to be believed. Legal warrior. Well, you know, you get mighty thirsty being a legal warrior. Right? By the way, when we were talking about the Republicans earlier, and we were Kevin and I were talking about food stamps a little bit, and you know the reality of what the food stamp program really is. One of the other things that the Republicans are considering, because it would be a great idea, they really do take their cues from Flush Flimball. Remember a year or so ago, maybe it wasn't even that, it all runs together for me after a while. But Flush was suggesting that, my friends, what these poor children in the inner city, these urban children, what they need to do is learn dumpster diving. He really said that. Well, because they're all worried about America's financial health, the Republican Party has decided that the way we need to balance the budget is on the backs of 9-year-olds. You know, and 5-year-olds. And 15-year-olds. They really had... See, I don't... What does somebody who, like down there in Glen Rose, Texas, what would they say if you told them that their beloved Republican Party was trying to kick 280,000 low-income children off of automatic enrollment in the free school lunch program and breakfast?
Well, their parents need to learn how to be parents again. You see, they're not being parents. They need to make them a hot breakfast every morning before they go to work at the sweatshop. Lay around and eat bonbons all day and go buy Cadillacs with all their welfare money. They need to get up and make them a breakfast and then come to school and make them some lunch.
This is what the Republicans propose instead of actually returning the millionaires to the same tax rates that they were paying 15 years ago. 13 years ago. So it's 1.5 million people receiving what we used to call food stamps and is now called SNAP, which isn't exactly a living. What is it, $3 a day, something like that? You got that. 1.5 million Americans... Pastor Hagee, I guess, would say, starve! And 280,000 children off of free school lunch.
But we need y'all to remember when you go to the polls, I'm the family values candidate, you see.
Jesus God. This is the kind of thing that makes me think that we may be close to done. Because this country cannot stand that kind of merciless imposition of so-called austerity. Oh, and by the way, don't think that the Donald is the only idiot out there when it comes to wind power. Mike Pompeo, he's a Republican, and he represents the Koch brothers. He's from Kansas. Has defended the subsidization, you know, corporate welfare for the oil industry, to the last ounce of strength in his body. But by God, even though the world community agrees that the future, not just of energy on this planet, but of economies as well, lies in renewable, sustainable energy. And regardless of the fact that he supports $4 billion in corporate welfare a year for the oil industry, who are ExxonMobil is reporting record profits on a daily basis, he had this to say about the wind industry and a production tax credit extended to the wind industry. You know, giving them a few crumbs from the same table at which big oil sups with both feet in the trough. The program has been around an awfully long time, and it's time to let that industry stand on its own 2 feet. And I'm confident that they'll do it. There's great creative engineers and innovators in the alternative energy field, and I'm confident they'll be successful. Because he can't stand the $1 billion a year that you and I, we the people, we have to have 4 billion a year literally shaken out of our pockets. But if we would like to see more money go to the sustainable energy industry, you know, because hillbillies like me, we object to being killed for a profit and having our friends and neighbors, loved ones poisoned for a profit. That's communism. We've been subsidizing some of these industries with tax credits for multiple decades. And every time they get to the end of the line, they get within a year, they say, if you just give me fill in the blank one more year, four more years, that's all I want, just a little more time. What history would demonstrate is that they would continue to come back to the federal trough and ask for more time yet again at the end. You mean like the oil industry that's been cruising along very nicely since the early 20th century, Mike Pompeo? You sad little petroleum stoot. Yeah, like that. Ooh, I almost jumped the gun. I looked over, I forgot about the clock being the way the clock is, and looked over there and it said 9 o'clock. But it's 10 minutes fast. As soon as the show's over, I have to sort that out. That's a toughie. That's a toughie. That just sucks so much out of it. I'm going to save that for Friday on the front porch. Oh, yeah. Here's a funny. A funny. Let's end this with a ha-ha. The Republicans, the Romney Republicans, his close advisors who are supposed to be really smart people, people who are foreign policy advisors like Ambassador Pierre Prosper. Why, what a lovely Republican name, Prosper. Pierre Prosper is angry at President Obama for trying to use diplomacy with countries like Russia. Here.
The result is that the United States has become a spectator on issues of national security. We've also been, you know, embarrassed by North Korea, where again, it continues to be a conciliatory, leaning forward approach, and yet the North Koreans will launch a missile surprising the United States, violating their agreement. You know, Russia is another example of where we give, Russia gets, and we get nothing in return. The United States abandoned its missile defense sites in Poland and Czechoslovakia, yet Russia does nothing but obstruct us with our efforts in Iran, Syria, and even worse, the president.
Yeah, I'm surprised whoever it was that was doing all that clacking and typing. I think they had to stop the recording right there because they burst out into peals of uncheckable laughter. This guy is a foreign policy advisor. I know it was a little bit tinny, but you heard that, didn't you? The United States abandoned its missile defense sites in Poland and Czechoslovakia. Czechoslovakia. I know it's tough when they have to, when world upheavals wind up redrawing borders and rewriting maps and everything, but that doesn't mean that you get to just ignore what was done. There isn't a Czechoslovakia. There just isn't. There's a Czech Republic. There's a Slovak Republic, or Slovakia, or I'm not real sure, but I know it's not Czechoslovakia. There's a Slovenia. But there's not a Czechoslovakia anymore. And there hasn't been for 20 freaking years! But this is the guy who's advising the guy who wants to be the President of the United States. And then there's that whole business about the United States abandoned its missile defense sites. Help me, Jeebus. You can't abandon things that aren't there. There never was a missile defense system in Eastern Vietnam. No. No, they weren't there. So there was nothing to abandon. Ultimately, it's the same thing as the guys in the people, the little fundy, what'd you call them, Dr. John? Ass pickers in Glen Rose, Texas. It's there if they believe it's there. Czechoslovakia is still there. I just checked them. Oh, what? Wait. Huh? Oh, damn. Kind of embarrassing. Kind of incompetent. And kind of terrifying. Because, you know, this guy wants to go and strong-arm the Russians. Now, tell them what for. You know, if I was in the religion advocating business, I'd tell you to fall on your knees and pray to God or the deity of your choice, that Romney's not elected. Yes, I know lots of scary stuff that Barack Obama is doing. But there's not a person better than him running for president. And write-in votes don't even get counted. We got a primary coming up, and I'm going to leave his name blank, just like I said I'm going to do. Anybody that still has a primary, I'd advise them to do the same. Just as a little, message. And I have my own personal version of a deal breaker. All bets are off if the first shot is fired at Iran. Period. Then again, for all I know, the first shots have already been fired. Or maybe they were fired by our proxies. But God Almighty! Willard Romney isn't just bland and dull, he's blandly and dully stupid. Like I said early in the program, it is an absolute intellectual fallacy to equate the ability to make money become more money with being intelligent. And Willard Romney makes my innards tie themselves in more knots than they're already in. So thanks, everybody, for joining in this evening in the conversation. I do appreciate it so very much. Hope you'll join us for Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. Thanks to the all-volunteer staff that makes all of this happen. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox, who keeps all the technical wizardry going and maintains the website. He's a damn fine host in his own right when he's not working himself to death. And thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. There's not a stream that streams that doesn't do so because of all of Ben's heroic work. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. You can also go to stoptheache.org and learn about the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign. You'll learn a lot in either place. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, ever since last night, I've come to think of the problem that I was dealing with earlier in the week as that little Republican in my gut. Because it's the perfect analogy, isn't it? Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Available on a wide variety of platforms, such as iTunes Radio, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, WhiteRoseSociety.org, Stitcher Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, and a whole host of others. Listen as you choose. No, that really is. That's how I've come to think of my gallbladder. That little Republican in my gut. Because the gallbladder is essentially worthless and generally does nothing but cause pain. Republican. I mean, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, right? I know things have kind of run together, but this really is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I have several examples. Of course, you can the budget business is interesting. But here's a Republican. How about Monica Crowley over at Radio Rwanda? She's one of the attack blondes. And when Sandra Fluke had the audacity to tweet that she has become engaged to be married, Monica Crowley tweeted back, "To a man?" Because, of course, you know, that must be some kind of lesbian. To a man? Is Monica Crowley still capable of having children? Now, I'm just asking this because if she ever becomes pregnant and they announce the birth of her baby, I want to tweet, Monica Crowley gave birth to a human? Because anything that would be the spawn of that revolting thing, I don't know, that unforgettable scene from the first Alien movie comes to mind where the little baby alien comes bursting out of the guy's belly and then flies off into the ship. You know, a woman announces her engagement and some filth merchant at Radio Rwanda, Fox News,
has nothing better to do with her very well-paid time than to assert her surprise that the woman making the announcement isn't gay. In other words, Monica Crowley is essentially useless and does nothing but cause pain. She's a gallbladder. She's a Republican. So, henceforward, yes, I have a rotten little Republican in my gut, and we're going to figure out a way to get it removed. I'll tell you now, I don't think it's going to interfere with the broadcast schedule, but I do have an appointment scheduled next week to discuss how we go forward on this. Next Wednesday, I think it is. I think I'll check my doctor's voter registration. Just saying. Before I screw up in the office and say, yeah, we got to get this little Republican out of my gut. Because things like that slip out. Some, you know, when something takes over, it's very difficult for me to say Republican instead of Repiglican. And that can be troublesome sometimes. What'd you call them? Mm-hmm. But of course, no, talking about causing pain. And yeah, it feels like I do have some a thorn in my side, a really, really big one. The House leadership, Eric Cantor and John Boehner, have declared, they've declared that there's not enough pain among the suffering lower reaches, economic reaches of our society. No, they want to cut food assistance, and they also want to cut financial regulations. Cut. In other words, they are essentially useless and do nothing but cause pain. Including, and of course, all of this sort of turns around, Paul Ryan, Eddie Munster from Wisconsin. You remember Paul Ryan. His father sadly died when he was a 14 or 15 year old, and then we, the people of the United States, paid him living expenses, which he socked away and used to go to college. Of course, now that he's got his, screw the rest of us. Or screw the next generation, the one after that, and the one after that. It is a delight to see these right-wing asshats caught in their own hypocrisy. In this particular instance, he's been caught. What's the quote here? This was back in 2005.